I have been focusing until now on how we honestly express what is alive in us and what would make life more wonderful for us. I'd now like to turn our attention to how we can empathically connect with what is alive in others and what would make life more wonderful for them. What I mean by empathy is a very special quality of understanding. It's not just intellectually understanding what the other person's saying. It's much more powerful and much more precious than that quality of understanding. Carl Rogers describes the impact of empathy on its recipients. He says it this way: when someone really hears you, without judging what you are saying, without trying to take responsibility for you, without trying to mold you, it feels damn good. When I've been listened to and when I've been heard, I'm able to reperceive my world in a new way and go on. It is astonishing how elements that seem unsolvable become solvable when someone listens, how confusions that seem irremediable turn into relatively clear-flowing streams when one is heard. Rogers is talking there about empathic understanding, not just intellectual understanding. One of my favorite stories about empathic connection comes from the principal of a school. She had returned after lunch one day to find Millie, an elementary school student, sitting dejectedly in her office waiting to see her. She sat down next to Millie, who began speaking by saying, "Mrs. Anderson, have you ever had a week when everything you did hurt somebody else and you never intended to hurt anyone at all?" "Yes," the principal replied, "I think I understand." Whereupon Millie proceeded to describe her week. "By now," the principal related to me, "I was quite late for a very important meeting. I still had my coat on, and I was anxious not to keep a room full of people waiting. And so I asked Millie, 'Millie, what can I do for you?'" Millie reached over, took both my shoulders in her hands, looked me straight in the eyes and said very firmly, "Mrs. Anderson, I don't want you to do anything. I just want you to listen." The principal told me that this was one of the most significant moments of learning in her life, that she was taught by a child, never mind the room full of adults waiting for her. So she and Millie moved over to a bench that afforded them more privacy and sat. The principal put her arm around her shoulders. The child put her head on her chest. And she allowed the child to talk until she was done. She just was with her empathically. One of the most satisfying aspects of my work is to hear how individuals have used nonviolent communication to strengthen their ability to connect empathically with others. My friend Laurence, who lives in Switzerland, described how upset she had felt when her 6-year-old son had stormed away angrily while she was still talking to him. Isabel, her 10-year-old daughter, who had accompanied her to a recent nonviolent communication workshop, said, "So you're really angry, Mom. You'd like for him to talk when he's angry and not run off." Laurence marveled at how, upon hearing Isabella's words, she had felt an immediate diminishing of tension and was subsequently able to be more understanding with her son when he returned. A college instructor described how relationships between students and faculty had been affected when several members of the faculty learned to listen empathically and to express themselves more vulnerably and honestly. The college instructor said, "The students opened up more and more and told us about the various personal problems that were interfering with their studies. The more they talked about it, the more work they were able to complete. Even though this kind of listening took a lot of our time, we were glad to spend it in this way. Unfortunately, the dean got upset. He said we were not counselors and should spend more time teaching and less time talking with the students." When I asked how the faculty had dealt with this, the instructor replied, "We empathized with the dean's concern. We heard that he felt worried and wanted to know that we weren't getting involved in things we couldn't handle. We also heard that he needed reassurance that the time spent on talking wasn't cutting into our teaching responsibilities. He seemed relieved by the way we listened to him. We continued to talk with the students because we could see that the more we listened to them, the better they did in their studies. When we work in a hierarchically structured institution, there's a tendency to hear commands and judgments from those higher up in the hierarchy. While we may easily empathize with our peers and those in less powerful positions, we may find ourselves being defensive or apologetic instead of empathic in the presence of those we identify as our superiors. This is why I was particularly pleased that these faculty members had remembered to empathize with their dean as well as with their students. Because we're called to reveal our deepest feelings and needs, we may sometimes find it challenging to express ourselves in nonviolent communication. Self-expression becomes easier, however, after we empathize with others, because we will then have touched their humanness and realize the common qualities we share. The more we connect with the feelings and needs behind their words, the less frightening it is to open up to other people. The situations where we are the most reluctant to express vulnerability are often those where we want to maintain a tough image for fear of losing authority or control. Once I showed my vulnerability to some members of a street gang in Cleveland by acknowledging the hurt I was feeling and my desire to be treated with more respect. "Oh, look," one of them remarked, "he's feeling hurt. Isn't that too bad?" At which point all his friends chimed in laughing. Well, I could interpret them as taking advantage of my vulnerability. That would be one option. Another option, I could have blamed them in some way for how they responded. Or I could empathize with the feelings and needs behind their behavior. If, however, I have an image that I'm being humiliated and taken advantage of, I may be too wounded, angry, or scared to be able to empathize. At such a moment, I would need to withdraw physically in order to offer myself some empathy or to request it from a reliable source. After I've discovered the needs that have been so powerfully triggered in me and have received adequate empathy for them from myself, I then can usually be ready to return and empathize with the other party. In situations of pain, I recommend first getting the empathy necessary to go beyond the thoughts occupying our heads and get down to recognize our deeper needs. Now, this takes some practice, and it may be that at that moment we're not able to get back to the other person and empathize with them. As I listened closely to the gang member's remark, "Oh, look, he's feeling hurt. Isn't that too bad?" and the laughter that followed, I sensed that he and his friends were annoyed and not wanting to be subjected to guilt trips and manipulation. They may have been reacting to people in their past who use phrases like, "That hurts me," to imply disapproval. Since I didn't verify it with them out loud, I have no way of knowing if my guess was in fact accurate. Just focusing my attention there, however, kept me from either taking it personally or getting angry. Instead of judging them as ridiculing or treating me disrespectfully, I concentrated on hearing the pain and needs behind their behavior. "Hey," one of them burst out, "this is a bunch of crap you're offering us. Suppose there are members of another gang here and they have guns and you don't, and you say just stand there and talk to them, that's crap." Then everybody was laughing again, and then again I directed my attention to what they might be feeling and needing. And I said out loud, "So it sounds like you're really fed up. You want to learn something that's valuable in your situation." "Yeah," one of them said, "and if you lived in this neighborhood, you know what you're saying is a bunch of crap." And I responded again empathically, "So you need to trust that whatever you're getting from somebody is going to be really relevant. So you want to work with people who have understanding of your situation." The student said, "Damn right. Some of these dudes would blast you away before you got two words out of your mouth." And I said, "So You'd like some understanding of the dangers that are existing in your environment. I continued to listen in this manner, sometimes verbalizing what I heard and sometimes not. Our conversation went on about 45 minutes. There was a big shift in the energy between us. They felt that I was truly understanding them. A counselor in the program noticed the shift and asked them out loud, "What do you think of this guy?" The gentleman who had been giving me the roughest time replied, "He's the best speaker we ever had." Astonished, the counselor turned to me and whispered, But you haven't said anything." "No, in fact, I hadn't gotten to teaching them nonviolent communication yet, but by living it and empathically connecting with what the students said, I was demonstrating that there was nothing they could throw at me that I wouldn't be interested in hearing what their needs were behind it. When they saw this, they were experiencing nonviolent communication, and it had great power with them.